Tonight's topic is the heart's power and joy. And aside from sounding somewhat poetic, I mean it literally. We vastly underestimate our heart's capacity to handle really challenging things. It's sort of like the little superhero that lives inside of us and can do things that it's kind of hard to believe. What it can handle is our suffering. And when we give it the credit that it's due, it can do it better. So that's the point of this Dharma talk, is to celebrate the heart's power and joy. And during the course of the day, it has a lot to tackle. We do a fair amount of suffering. The Pali word dukkha, which lately I've been translating as distress. It appears usually in what we call difficult states of mind. That's sort of like the Buddhist euphemism for we've really got a storm going inside of us. And I just jotted down some of my favorites. Fear, grief, anger, dislike, and regret. And boy, they can really take the fun right out of the day. Fear presents itself in many forms and volumes. At low volume, it's just a sense of caution, or can get more intense and be anxiety. We can actively worry, go into a panic, and experience just sheer terror. So this whole range is possible with this difficult mind state. Grief also has a wide spectrum. And I'm using this word to mean our response to loss, from little things to, you know, really big losses. For example, I'm a volunteer at Kaiser with the NODA program, No One Dies Alone. We'll get emails usually or phone calls letting us know that someone's in their last 48 hours or so, and we go and be with them. Well, to get on the ward, we need a Kaiser ID tag, and mine has a knack of hiding. So I'll get the call or the email and get all ready to go, and I can't find the tag. And once it really was lost. I had to replace it. And I felt, in all these instances, I felt some degree of a sense of loss, of being deprived of this thing that was important. And then I'll bet everybody in this room has had the experience of rushing out the door to get someplace on time, and you can't find this little thing that starts the car, you know, the car key. And you go through this whole grieving of all the things that you thought were going to happen based on your getting where you were going on time. You've lost them now. So there's grief for these little things all the way to, you know, grief for losing someone we love. Anger can go from mild irritation to rage. Dislike. Well, maybe we just want to avoid someone or something. Or we start to really enjoy gossiping about them. Or we discover that we're plotting revenge in some way. Or, you know, it can go all the way to just hatred. You know, we just want, we have ill will for that person or thing, institution. Regret, and I'm using this word for things we do that we wish we hadn't done. So we can react with shame or self-blame, a loss of self-esteem. So with just this short list, relatively, you can see that there are many manifestations, and also they hybridize. You know, for example, the anger can turn into dislike, or the two of them can gang up together. They all have physiological effects. We feel these states. And every individual I've found feels them differently. I mean, you know, we all have our patterns. And it can be, you know, the mouth goes dry, the muscles tighten, there's a response in the gut, you know, the way it works to digest can very suddenly change unpleasantly. Our breathing can change. Maybe we get dizzy. The body really suffers when we do. All of these mind states shrink our awareness. They are so difficult that they suck up our available attention. And there's less of it for, you know, maybe having second thoughts, getting a different perspective. It's like we have blinders on. And the mind tends to get confused. And this can lead us to make bad decisions or engage in bad behavior. And finally, all of these states of suffering are fed by clinging to the idea of ourselves. And this clinging, together with the states of mind, pull us further into an isolated self if we're not skillful when we have these difficult states of mind arise. And the common unskillful way of dealing with them that the untrained mind does is that it just wants them to end. And so it tries to avoid them somehow, either through denial or in engaging in some kind of distraction, maybe going to an addictive behavior. But Buddha said aversion, which is what all of these mind states are, can't be overcome by aversion, but only by love. So this desire that we have these mind states end is aversion. And it doesn't work. It's so counter to the way that we have grown up to deal with suffering. But the only way that we can be at peace again is to turn toward these unwanted states of mind, our love. So this is the point to tonight's talk, and that is that we have to open our hearts to it all. Like Pema Chodron said, and it was, this quote was in the email I sent out. I'm going to read it again because it really says it. If your everyday practice is open to all your emotions, to all the people you meet, to all the situations you encounter, without closing down, trusting that you can do that, then that will take you as far as you can go. Then you will understand all the teachings that anyone has ever taught. So, you know, it may sound like nirvana at the end of a long, long journey, but it's something that we can do right now, every moment, when we realize that we're suffering with one of these states of mind, rather than try to get ourselves out of it, open to it. Open to it with a loving curiosity. Now, this might sound like a dreadful challenge, like something kids would dare each other to do. Turn toward the suffering. Invite it into your heart. But really, what's involved are the feelings of compassion, love, serene acceptance, and joy. And what's not to like about that? You know, these are good feelings. This opening of the heart that I'm talking about involves the Brahmaviharas, the four divine abodes, which are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, which I just called serene acceptance. So how this works is that the harshness of these states of mind, the suffering that we feel, comes from our resistance to something and then to them. And this shutting down and closing of the heart. So when we open the heart, there's no friction. There's nothing to hit against, and it passes through. Not instantaneously, but we can feel it pass through. There's sort of a Doppler effect that happens. It's mild as it develops, and then it gets really, really loud, and then it fades. And it's a gradual process. But we can feel that as it passes through. So the open heart is a state of love. It's a profound and total acceptance, which really, I think, when we look at our heart's deepest desire, that's what we want most of all, is this profound and total acceptance. And the ironic thing is that we have it within us to generate that for ourselves. This acceptance that I'm talking about is not approval. Approval is nowhere near worth as much as this acceptance. Because approval, when we approve of something, we're holding it up against our standards. We're reserving the right to reject it. Acceptance is just being okay with what is. There is a sense of power, a tremendous confidence that comes with it. Through this kind of loving acceptance, the heart has the capacity to hold everything, just like Pema said, and to hold it with compassion. Compassion for whatever our minds are telling us is bad about it. So maybe we think that the mind state we're in, for example, anger, we think it's bad because, well, it's associated with something bad having been done to us. Or we think it's bad because our bodies are suffering. We're all uptight about it. But the heart can hold it all and accept it all. Our minds think that our emotions are bad because they hurt physically. And, you know, this is really kind of an infantile attitude that, well, if it hurts, it's bad and I don't want it. But, you know, we grew up with these reactions from early childhood, and our minds never had a chance to know any different. So we have to train them to respond differently. And we start with this aspect of love that responds to suffering, and that is compassion. When we feel fear, grief, anger, regret, or dislike, we meet it with compassion for ourselves. If we're thinking a lot about the situation that gave rise to this difficult mind state, then bring compassion to the people that are involved, the institutions, other beings. You know, maybe we're upset that an animal has behaved in a way that has hurt our feelings. Bring compassion to all of it, remembering that all beings suffer. And that's probably why they did what they did. You know, I had a cat snub me on my daily walk today. And I realized she didn't like the way I was petting her. It turns out she doesn't like to have her face, you know, rubbed. You know, every cat's got his or her own little thing. And I'm just getting to know this one. So, didn't feel good, and I needed compassion for both of us. Our word compassion comes from the Latin, which means feeling deeply with another. And, you know, in Buddhism, that does include all sentient beings. So compassion connects us with other beings and ends our sense of isolation and allows us to transcend the sense that we have that we are separate selves. It's the beginning of a very deep kind of freedom, because it breaks our clinging to our idea of self. And that clinging is what puts the hurt into dukkha. So when we feel compassion, we're turning not away, but toward the suffering and opening our arms to it and holding it to our hearts. I like to think of compassion for myself as like holding a young child that's been hurt or is sad. When we can do that for ourselves, we're acknowledging our vulnerability, accepting it. And so we have to let go of ego. We see that we're really the same as all other beings, and that we're able also to hold them as young children, to see in them that vulnerability. When we allow ourselves to feel what the body is feeling in these difficult mind states, we bring to those feelings the balm of loving attention. Not only is this tremendously comforting to the physical sensations, but it stops the mind from retelling the story, which just prolongs that difficult mind state. Buddha compared it to standing next to a raging, out-of-control fire and throwing logs onto it. There's a saying, get out of the problem and into the solution. And that's what compassion allows us to do. But it takes faith and courage to face what distresses us. However, it is the only way to heal. It's the only way. We can't dodge it. In hospice, I sat with people who had dodged it all their lives. And some of the incredible extents that they went to try to deal with it at the last moment. There's a story that there's a link to it on my website. It's called Thelma's Grudge. And I recommend it if you're curious about what it's like at the end of life when you've been trying to dodge one of these difficult mind states all of our lives. They don't disappear. So the faith and the courage to face these difficult mind states, the faith can be based on inspiration, you know, and pardon my ego, but, you know, maybe something in this talk will, someday you'll remember it and think, ah, I need to turn toward it, take it into my heart. And then, whoa, maybe it'll work. And then you have experience, and that becomes true faith that you can do it. One of the students I was working with on this online intro to meditation course that just ended, this woman was telling me about after she was divorced, and she'd put the two little kids to bed, and the house was quiet and cold, and she was sad. She sat down and she said, all right, this is how it's going to be for a while. So she said, okay, Mr. Silence and Mrs. Loneliness, we need to become friends. And I love that story because it was just an intuitive turning toward the suffering, embracing it, and seeking comfort in it. After my partner died of cancer, I went to a workshop with Pema Chodron, and I asked her how to deal with grief. And she said, you have to do Tonglen, and you should do it every day for 6 months. Make a commitment. Well, based on pretty high authority, there's your inspiration. I summoned up the courage, and I did what she taught, which is to invite the suffering into my heart and visualize my heart transforming it into some kind of comfort. And every day when I sat down to my meditation, I did Tonglen for at least 10 minutes, sometimes the whole session. Sometimes there was so much suffering that it took my entire daily meditation. I always had Kleenex right there. But it really helped me to turn into it and to learn from it. Not to have it be a scar on my psyche, but to have it become a very rich source of learning and wisdom that has served me very well in my life since then. The broken heart is an open heart. And grief is the process of learning to let the heart stay open to the loss. Through compassion, the heart can take in all of our suffering, accept it, and love it. Love us. In the process of doing this, we are filled with that love. And if we recognize this, it gives rise to joy. Because as I said a little while ago, what is it we want more than profound loving acceptance? Each case of opening to suffering and healing it affirms our faith in the heart's power to do that and will bring us contentment, peace, and joy. Thank you.